Misha.
Omar.
Vanessa.
Ian.
Zane.
Christopher.
Ruthie.
Nicole.
Pavarotti.
Carlitos.
Ismarie.
Kevin.
JD.
James.
Jacob.
Alexis.
Tiana.
Courtney.
Elizabeth.
It has been an honor, joy, and blessing to have these foster children as part of our family. We believe the Lord works in mysterious ways, and it is a matter of trusting and letting Him work on our lives. In 1972, I came to this country with a student visa that was sponsored by Julio and Esther Munoz. When I arrived in LAX, the first thing that I remember was my mother telling me, "How come your suitcase is empty?" And I just looked at her and I said, I came to the United States. I gave it all away to my friends and my cousins. The next day, she had to take me to a store and get some clothes because all I had was a suit that I was wearing when I arrived here. I remember after we bought all the clothes, she took me to a department store and said, "Go ahead, pick your bicycle that you always wanted." It was a 10 speed. I thought I died and gone to heaven at that time. You gotta realize, back in that time in Costa Rica, owning a 10-speed bicycle was like nowadays giving your teenager a Tesla Model X so they can go to school. I rode that bicycle the next day from Santa Ana to Newport Beach, and I did it many times after that. And one thing I remember when I got there was, after a while, I was very hungry. I needed to eat, and I went to this fast food place that was there, and I kept on saying, "Hamburger, Coke." And I know the girl was looking at me, asking me probably if I wanted fries or something else, and I just kept on saying, "Hamburger, Coke." No matter what she said, "Hamburger, Coke." Eventually, she gave it to me. And that happened every time that I went there. Needless to say, today I'm a vegetarian. Pastor Merardo Leon, who had baptized my mother, invited me to go to church. I went with him. I got involved with the youth ministries. I started helping with all the kids. Before long, I became a pathfinder. Well, I didn't want to do it by myself, so I invited my best friend, George Lopez. And as soon as he joined, I started giving him Bible stories. I didn't know much about giving Bible stories. I got me a booklet, and I just followed the whole thing, and I sat him with me, and I made him go through the whole thing. When he was ready, we both got baptized.
Many, many years later, I came from Colombia. Since my family was already a La Sierra Spanish church, I went there, and I met this cute guy. So we were best friends for 4 years. It took him 4 years. But we were together at a clinic for 2 years, together at the same clinic. And then we got married in December 1990. He proposed in October, and we got married in November, in December. So, you know, it was very fast. Our son Alice was born in 1992, and our son Andrew was born in 1994. And that's how our American dream began as a family. We all have dreams. What to do with our lives, how many kids to have, how to help our children succeed, how to show them the love of God, and how to be a good Christian and a good citizen. But we say, what a better way to show them how to do all this by example. For over 10 years, I worked as a claims examiner. But due to the repetitive typing movements, my arms and neck got affected. They suffered. I was making good money, I liked the company, I liked the hours, I was right next to my kids at the academy, but my arms and neck wouldn't cooperate anymore, so I had to quit my job.
We have seen the ministry of other families at our church, taking care of special needs children and adults. We saw the love that they had for these children and decided that we could open not just our home, but our hearts to children with special needs. We felt in our hearts that the Lord was leading us this way, that it was the right thing to do. It took us over 2 years to get all the required paperwork and all the licenses and approvals. Our prayers have always been for the Lord to send us the children that we could care for and that need the services that we could provide. You see, when the phone call comes from Child Protective Services, normally they don't know much about the child. These children are removed from their homes due to drugs, alcohol abuse by their parents, severe neglect, physical and or sexual abuse. It's a 24/7, 365 days a year. It's a job that you do with an open heart, where nothing could pay you for the long hours, pain, and suffering involved in doing what's in the best interest for these little angels. Nothing could have prepared us for what was about to come.
When our first call came, we were very, very excited. The call was for a very young boy who was removed from his home, and they needed a small family home. That's what our license are for. Since it was already dark and late in the evening, and the social worker was coming from far, they asked us if we could go to San Bernardino and pick him up from Costco parking lot. I remember all the little faces in the van. Just looking at us. I wanted to take everybody home, but we couldn't. And we thought that if we could only take one child, we would be doing the Lord's work. We still remember this boy crying day and night for his mommy.
We didn't know what to do with him, so I decided I was going to teach him how to ride a bicycle right over here where you see the industrial buildings on Riverwalk. There used to be a lot of dirt mounds. That's where he learned how to ride a bike, and he loved it, and that kind of helped him ease into being away from his family. He taught us what shooting from downtown meant. We're not a basketball family, we're a soccer family. So we learned what he meant. And ever since, when we hear about basketball, we hear a game, it always reminds us of this child. We had another boy who has seizure disorders. When he arrived, we were not aware of the severity of his medical condition. His time with us was filled with long days, sleepless nights, and unfortunately, he needed to move to a higher level of care home and left us after a couple of weeks.
Our home built a reputation for being able to handle very difficult children. I remember a phone call we had about a three-year-old little girl. I love little girls. We have two boys, so we always wanted a girl. She needed a place. She needed a home. She has been in many homes already, and they said nobody could handle her, but, you know, I thought it's a girl. I just wanted a girl. So my husband said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes, why not? She's only three. How hard could it be?" So we accepted this little one into our home. She stole our hearts. But let me tell you, she has been the most difficult child we have had up to now, but the one that we loved and missed the most. So we always look at each other after she started hitting, biting, throwing horrible tantrums. She threw everything she could get a hold on, and so we say, "Yeah, how hard could it be, right?" So now, every time we get a call, we always say, How hard could it be?
Being a foster parent means that your own children are better people because of the love and understanding they develop while helping raise the kids that come into our family. It's like saying your marriage vows. You will protect, love the children in sickness and in health, and in every situation, in the good times, in the bad times, and even in the ugly times. You might not be able to sleep because your child is having a really bad nightmare and you need to hold their hands until they feel better. You need to give them constant reassurance that they're safe and nothing is going to happen to them while they're there with you. Being a foster parent means you're going to meet so many people that when you see them at the store, you might not be able to remember if you've seen them in the school, at the doctor's office, or any place you've taken the children to. After a while, everybody looks so familiar, you better just smile and say hi to all.
So hi, everybody. Being a foster parent means that you will start all over again every time you get a new child. You'll repeat the same process all over, and you'll do it with patience, with love, because that's what you do, and that's what you love to do. You will show a child that love really is. Love doesn't come with neglect. Love doesn't come with sexual abuse. Love doesn't come with physical abuse. Love doesn't come with mental abuse. Being a foster parent means that you'll hurt and cry at times when the children don't see you. Because you are so sad, you're knowing all the pain and suffering they had already gone through. You see all the scars, you see the burns, the marks in their bodies. You see, you know, and see the abuse that they have gone through. It also means being able to say goodbye. Some kids may only stay with you for a day, maybe a week, but some cases, years.
Being a foster parent means that you don't know much about the children that you accept. Well, one time we were called for a little boy with no idea what his name was. He was found wandering the streets in the area, and that night when he was taking a shower, all of a sudden we heard this beautiful voice. He was singing in opera, and we had a beautiful concert that night. To this day, we don't know his name, but to us, he's always been Pavarotti. Being a foster parent means that you do not touch the life of a child, but the community around you. Everybody will also learn to love your children and will help you out in the time of need. For example, we had a teenager that ran away from the house, and everybody in the neighborhood was out in the streets looking for her until we found her.
The friendships that developed between our son's friends and the children at home has been amazing. One of the children we had, he knew everybody's name. So every time we came to church and we used to sit up in the balcony, he would say hi to everybody. Hi, John. Hi, Janine. Hi, this and that. And we couldn't say anything. And of course, we were late, and he was always saying it really loud. When the congregation was asked to kneel, and if the kids that he knew wouldn't do it, he would tell them, John, kneel down. They said to kneel. It's been an honor to be able to be part of the children's life and be an advocate for them. We have worked very hard with doctors, insurance companies, and hospitals to get the approvals required for surgeries before the children go back to their parents or to another home or to stay with us. The Lord has trusted us to take care of all the children we have had all these years.
It has been a joy to see the progress the children make, to see them have a beautiful smile for the first time after they arrived at our homes with all their teeth rotten, to be part of the excitement they were able to hear us for the very first time after they got hearing aids, to see them learn to say their very first word at the age of 5 because nobody had ever taught them how to talk, to see them learn how to eat a variety of foods when they have been eating one type of food, to see them learn to eat whatever was offered to them because when they were found, the only thing available to them was cat food. To watch the progress from only wanting to drink plain milk as their sole nutrition, or from being able to eat more than just once a day. From watching a child that could hardly walk, that was dragging this big deformed foot, and we got him surgeries, we did whatever it took, and finally, after many surgeries, he was able to fit that foot into a standard tennis shoe. From helping a child get a heart surgery for a heart murmur that needed to be repaired. The joy of watching children look in the mirror after having surgery or surgeries, and for the first time, their little eyes being able to focus together. Being able to introduce them to the joys of traveling, having taken them to Colombia and Costa Rica, having them scream with joy, perhaps fear, as they zipline through the rainforest canopy. Or watching their faces full of joy as we travel down the river, whitewater rafting. Or looking in the rainforest for poisonous dart frogs and finding them. The joy of developing a summer tradition trip going to San Clemente by taking the beach train, or following a yearly tradition started by one of our boys, consisting of sending his little teddy bear to Santa Claus at the beginning of December, just to have it come back at the end of Christmas with a new outfit. Meet Teddy.
Well, meet Dory. No, it's Teddy. Hi, Jakey's. Hi, JD. Hi, Kevin. Hi, baby. We have been blessed by having the legal guardianship of our three children that has been with us for the past 12 years. It's been a blessing to see them getting to know Jesus, to enjoy coming to church, to see their happiness when vacation Bible school starts, to see our biological sons being better people for the honest and pure love they have received from the children. Being foster parents has given us the opportunity to fulfill our mission and our commitment to the children, and it has given us many happy moments and very sad moments.
We have been able to give and receive pure love. We've had the support of not only our family, friends, but the support of many professionals and the support of our church. Because of the support, the children have been able to enjoy Vacation Bible School for many years. So a big thank you to our pastors, to the counselors, and to our church family. This has been a ministry that has not only touched our lives, but the lives of many others. It requires lots of prayers, not just lots of love, but patience as well. But we wouldn't have it any other way.
When I was diagnosed with endometriosis and having the hysterectomy done, I lost the possibility to have more kids. I always wanted one more. I was very, very sad for a very long time. The Lord bless us. With our little angels. So instead of being able to have one more child, He has given us 19 children and counting since 2003.
Beautiful. How hard could it be? How hard could it be to open your house, your finances, your time, your energy, your commitment, your entire family life to children in great distress with complex needs? How hard could it be? Well, for Lewis and Yvonne, the answer seems to be not that hard. Not because it's not challenging. I think it's not hard because just over 12 years ago, they decided that that's what they'll do. It's as simple as that. We heard Yvonne just share the following. She said, being a foster parent means that you will start all over again every time you get a new child. You'll repeat the same thing over and over, and you'll do it with patience and love. She said, because that's what you do. So every time a call comes now, they joke, how hard can it be? And I think they joke because they know the challenges, yes. But they don't view it as too much hardship because they made a decision, a resolution, a determination, a promise, a pledge, a vow. Or, to use a biblical description, they made a covenant to open their hearts to these children. How hard could it be? Not that hard, because that's what you do when you covenant. So, just briefly in response to the Ugalde's experience, I want us to reflect on a passage from Scripture where we find the similar commitment and covenant between God and God's people. Last week, Pastor Chris reflected on Alvin Rodriguez's story of his family's journey to a new country. Pastor Chris took us to Exodus, where God's people were wandering in the wilderness, and God instructed them, "Do not be afraid. Be still. Let God be God, and for God to lead them to safety, and the people just to move with God." The scripture I'd like to reflect on today takes us to the end of this wandering in the wilderness with God's people about to enter the promised land. It's in the book of Deuteronomy, and it's a book filled with speeches by Moses to a people preparing for living in a new land. What is central in this entire book is God's covenant with the people. Part of this covenant is what we heard last week, that God will be their God and lead them. And now, at the conclusion of all his speeches, Moses expands this covenant to where God's people are instructed to look out for others in distress, to look out for those in need, to look out for those who have want. Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 1. Moses says to the people right before they enter, "When you have come into the land the Lord is giving you as an inheritance to possess, and possess it and settle in it, you shall take some of your first fruit of the ground, which you harvest from the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you shall put it in a basket and go to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name." Verse 5, "You shall make this response before the Lord your God: 'A wandering Aramean was my ancestor. He went down into Egypt and lived there as an alien, few in number, and there he became a great nation, mighty and populous. When the Egyptians treated us harshly and afflicted us by imposing hard labor on us, we cried to the Lord, the God of our ancestors. The Lord heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. The Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with a terrifying display of power, and with signs and wonders, and he brought us into the place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground that you, O Lord, had given me." And then Moses transitions, and he says in verse 12, "When you have finished paying all tithe, giving it to the Levites, to the resident aliens, to the orphans and the widows, so that you may eat their fill within their towns, then you shall say the following before the Lord: 'I have removed the sacred portion from my house, and I have given it to the Levites, the resident aliens, the orphans and the widows, in accordance with your entire commandment that you commanded me. I have neither transgressed nor forgotten any of your commandments.'" These are instructions were given for the Festival of Weeks, what it was called. And it is essentially an outline for worship, a liturgy in the temple for bringing the first fruits from the harvest. They had received from God. Now it was time for them to bring back to God. And there are two parts to these instructions. There are words and there are actions. There are words and actions. First, the words. The first part, verse 1 through 10, instructs the people to recite God's saving actions, reaching back through their history of their ancestors. Moses provides a quick outline for them for how to recite God's mighty actions. They had their initial homelessness. They were wandering Aramean with their father. Their migration to Egypt, lived there as an alien. Their suffering there. They treated us harshly and afflicted us. Their cry to God for help. We cried to the Lord, God of our ancestors. Their redemption out of slavery. And they're settling in a fertile land. And so we see Moses give these instructions for reciting the good things that God had done for us. And as Pastor Chris reminded us last week, it is all God's work. All the people had to do was to rest in God's saving grace. It follows the same structure, this passage, as the Ten Commandments, where the Ten Commandments open with a preamble where God says, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt." in case the people forget their identity, in case the people forget the basis for everything that they're called to do, God here instructs people that as they settle to a new land, as they wander to this new place, to orient themselves according to God's saving work. That's the first part. Then we get to actions in this covenant. The second part of God's instruction expands the people's responsibility to now act, to look out for others, to care for those in distress, those in need, and those who have want. It says, God says, you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed a sacred portion from the house. And I've given it to the Levites, the resident aliens, the orphans, and the widows in accordance with my commandment that I've given you. I don't know about you, but I love this phrase, a sacred portion. As you recite the goodness of God and God's saving grace and caring compassion towards you, remember to act in kindness and caring compassion to others, especially those who are in need, those who have want, those who are in distress. But see just how God makes the point here. God says, you are all created in my image. We're all created in the image of God. We all share the divine imprint. And we are all indebted to God's saving work, whether from Cuba or Argentina, from Germany or Norway, from Indonesia or India, from Ghana or South Africa. But then God adds the following, there is a sacred portion. There is a portion of all that we possess that is sacred and belongs to the other, to the resident alien, to the orphan, to the widow, to those in distress, to those in need, or those who have want. I know that the sacred portion speaks specifically about the first fruits. But I think it is safe to say that the biblical vision that God gives us goes beyond tithing and talks about our hearts. There's this sacred portion in our hearts and our lives that is a call to have compassionate care for others. This is the second part of the instruction. And it's the reminder that together, divine grace and human action make a beautiful fabric. Full life, full joy come from keeping the covenant, acknowledging that God is first, and in acknowledging that, we are freed from our selfishness to seek out and help others. Because we have this sacred portion. We have this part that is sacred, that is holy, a part of us that belongs to others, to all others, but especially to those in distress, in need, and want. This idea of a sacred portion makes me think of this Elizabeth Stone quote. You may be familiar with that. Making the decision to have a child is to decide forever to have your heart go walking outside your body. You've heard that, parents? I think we all know this to be true, whether you are a parent or a child, because you know that your parents, you're carrying a part of their heart. That's why they tell you to do the things you need to do. In our children, we see a sacred portion of ourselves. And you just cannot help but look out for your children. That is why our heart stops for a second when he gets to his solo part for the choir. That's when our heart stops for a second when she's up for batting. That's when our heart stops for a second when he goes out on his first date. That's when our hearts stop for a second when she's awarded her high school or college diploma. That's when our hearts stop for a second when he wrecks his mountain bike. That's when our hearts stop when she has to go in for surgery. That's when our hearts stop when he says his marriage vows. That's why our hearts stop for a second when she's in labor with her own child. It's the same reality that God is tapping into here in Deuteronomy. We are all created by God with the sacred portion, a part of ourselves that belongs to others. To be a child of God is to forever have a part of your heart go walking outside your body in everyone you see. To be a child of God is to forever have a part of your heart go walking outside your body in everyone you see, especially those in distress, those who are in need, and those who have want, because we have a sacred portion. How hard could it be? How hard could it be when we are all bound together in love? How hard could it be when we all have a sacred portion? How hard can it be? It's not a question of resignation, it's a question of resolution. When I listen to the Ugaldis, I cannot help but think of how faithful they have been with their sacred portion. 19 kids over 12 years. What a beautiful heart they have for these kids. You and I, each of us, have a sacred portion. It doesn't mean we have to become foster parents. We feature the Ugaldis not to inspire you to do exactly the same. No. Of course, if you are inspired today to do exactly the same, come speak to them afterwards and they can share with you. We each have our sacred portion. Caring for foster kids may seem to be hard for some, perhaps easier for others. Our sacred portion is not limited to one option. There are a multitude of ways to live a caring, compassionate life. More often than not, it is not something glorious or spectacular. We become beautiful people when we give whatever we have to give. A smile, a handshake, a kiss, an embrace, a word of love, a present, a part of our life, or all of our life. One story of a different way of offering us your sacred portion is our foster youth gift card drive we do every year. You know, perhaps this is news to you if you're visiting. But every year around graduation time for our own schools, we have a gift card drive to help youth who are in the foster system who will be emancipated in our county. What we do is we collect gift cards to present to them. And along with that, for the last couple of years, we have invited you to come to the front to sign cards to just personalize these gifts to these kids. Just this last Thursday, they graduated again, and Lisa Walker, a member of our church and a social worker who started this project with us, sent a message to Pastor Chris. We have one youth who came to an event a couple years ago and received one of the Lasser University Church cards. Inside the card, someone had written the 23rd Psalm. He ended up in juvenile hall not long after that, but he took the card with him, reading it repeatedly. He says it helped him get through this experience. We met up with him again recently, and he told us his story. He is now speaking to youth in foster care and doing really well. You never know how much good one little card can do. Each of us have a sacred portion. There are a multitude of ways in which we can offer our sacred portion. I hope that the Ugaldi story and our passage from Deuteronomy will inspire you to think about your sacred portion. Who do you know who is in distress? Who do you know that is in great need? Who do you know who is in want? They are your sacred portion. How hard could it be? How hard could it be to take in foster children? How hard could it be to sit with someone who's dying? How hard could it be to help relocate a family after a tragedy? How hard could it be to adopt a grandparent? How hard could it be to go on a medical procedure with a friend? How hard could it be to look out for the lonely person across the room? How hard could it be to hold a colicky baby for a mom or a dad? How hard could it be to be gentle with your child that is throwing a temper tantrum? How hard could it be to volunteer 5 nights out of the year to do VBS? How hard could it be to babysit for an afternoon to support young parents or parents of four? How hard could it be to make a phone call to your aging, lonely relative? How hard could it be to do someone's laundry? How hard could it be to cook a meal? How hard could it be to postpone your Sabbath lunch just for 10 minutes to write a card for foster kids? How hard could it be just to put 10 bucks into someone's GoFundMe campaign? How hard could it be just to give a compliment, a smile? For every day, set aside that sacred portion that is yours and ask yourself, did I offer peace today? Did I bring a smile to someone's face? Did I say words of healing? Did I let go of my anger and resentment? Did I forgive? Did I love? These are the real questions. How hard could it be? Let us pray. So now, people of God, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength, and your neighbor who is your sacred portion as yourself. Amen.